Chapter 48. Home again the trickster. That same evening at dusk, Gabriel was leaning over Coggins' garden gate, taking an up and down survey, before retiring to rest. A vehicle of some kind was softly creeping along the grassy margin of the lane. From its breath the tones of two women talking. The tones were natural, and not at all suppressed. Oak instantly knew the voices to be those of Bathsheba and Liddy. The carriage came opposite and passed by. It was Miss Everdon's gig, and Liddy and her mistress were the only occupants of the seat. Liddy was asking questions about the city of Bath, and her companion was answering them listlessly and unconcernedly. Both Bathsheba and the horse seemed weary. The exquisite relief of finding that she was here again, safe and sound, overpowered all reflection, and Oak could only luxuriate in the sense of it. All grave reports were forgotten. He lingered and lingered on, till there was no difference between the eastern and western expanses of sky, and the timid hares began to limp courageously round the dim hillocks. Gabriel might have been there an additional half hour, when a dark form walked slowly by. "Gee, good night, Gabriel," the passer said. It was Boldwood. "Gee, good night, sir," said Gabriel. Boldwood likewise vanished up the road, and Oak shortly afterwards turned indoors to bed. Farmer Boldwood went on towards Miss Everdon's house. He reached the front, and approaching the entrance, saw a light in the parlor. The blind was not drawn down, and inside the room was Bathsheba, looking over some papers or letters. Her back was towards Boldwood. He went to the door, knocked, and waited with tense muscles and an aching brow. Boldwood had not been outside his garden since his meeting with Bathsheba in the road to Yalbury. Silent and alone, he had remained in moody meditation on woman's ways, deeming as essentials of the whole sex the accidents of the single one of their number he had ever closely beheld. By degrees a more charitable temper had pervaded him, and this was the reason of his sally tonight. He had come to apologize and beg forgiveness of Bathsheba with something like a sense of shame at his violence, having but just now learnt that as he had returned only from a visit to Liddy, as he supposed, the Bath escapade being quite unknown to him. He inquired for Miss Everdon. Liddy's manner was odd, but he did not notice it. She went in, leaving him standing there, and in her absence the blind of the room containing Bathsheba was pulled down. Boldwood augured ill from that sign. Liddy came out. "My mistress cannot see you, sir," she said. The farmer instantly went out by the gate. He is unforgiven, that was the issue of it all. He had seen her who was to him simultaneously a delight and a torture, sitting in the room he had shared with her as a peculiarly privileged guest only a little earlier in the summer, and as he had denied him an entrance there now. Boldwood did not hurry homeward. It was 10 o'clock at least, when, walking deliberately through the lower part of Weatherbury, he heard the carrier's spring van entering the village. The van ran to and from a town in a northern direction, and it was owned and driven by a Weatherbury man, at the door of whose house it now pulled up. The lamp fixed to the head of the hood illuminated a scarlet and gilded form, who was the first to alight. "Ah," said Boldwood to himself, "come to see her again." Troy entered the carrier's house, which had been the place of his lodging on his last visit to his native place. Boldwood was moved by a sudden determination. He hastened home. In 10 minutes he was back again, and made as if he were going to call upon Troy at the carrier's. But as he approached, someone opened the door and came out. He heard this person say good night to the inmates, and the voice was Troy's. This was strange, coming so immediately after his arrival. Boldwood, however, hastened up to him. Troy had what appeared to be a carpet bag in his hand, the same that he had brought with him. It seemed as if he were going to leave again this very night. Troy turned up the hill and quickened his pace. Boldwood stepped forward. "Sergeant Troy?" "Yes, I'm Sergeant Troy. Just arrived from up the country, I think. Jay just arrived from Bath. I am William Boldwood." "Indeed. The tone in which this word was uttered was all that had been wanted to bring Boldwood to the point. I wish to speak a word with you, he said. What about? About her who lives just ahead there, and about a woman you have wronged. I wonder at your impertinence, said Troy, moving on. Now look here, said Boldwood, standing in front of him, wonder or not, you are going to hold a conversation with me. Troy heard the dull determination in Boldwood's voice, looked at his stalwart frame, then at the thick cudgel he carried in his hand. He remembered it was past 10 o'clock. It seemed worthwhile to be civil to Boldwood. Very well, I'll listen with pleasure, said Troy, placing his bag on the ground. Only speak low, for somebody or other may overhear us in the farmhouse there. Well then, I know a good deal concerning your Fanny Robbins' attachment to you. I may say too, that I believe I am the only person in the village, excepting Gabriel Oak, who does know it. You ought to marry her. I suppose I ought. Indeed, I'll wish to, but I cannot. Why? Troy was about to utter something hastily. He then checked himself and said, I am too poor. His voice was changed. Previously it had had a devil-may-care tone. It was the voice of a trickster now. Boldwood's present mood was not critical enough to notice tones. He continued, I may as well speak plainly, and understand, I don't wish to enter into the questions of right or wrong, woman's honor and shame, or to express any opinion on your conduct. I intend a business transaction with you. I see, said Troy. Suppose we sit down here. An old tree trunk lay under the hedge immediately opposite, and they sat down. The tone in which this word was uttered was all Troy heard the dull determination in Boldwood's voice, looked at his stalwart frame, then at the thick plainly, and understand, I don't wish to enter into a I was engaged to be married to Miss Everton, said Boldwood. But you came and not engaged, said Troy. As good as engaged. If I had not turned up, she might have become engaged to you. Hang might. W would, then. If you had not come, I should certainly, yes, certainly have been accepted by this time. If you had not seen her, you might have been married to Fanny. Well, there's too much difference between Miss Everdeen's station and your own for this flirtation with her ever to benefit you by ending in marriage. So all I ask is, don't molest her anymore. Marry Fanny. Make it worth your while. How will you? I'll pay you well now, I'll settle a sum of money upon her, and I'll see that you don't suffer from poverty in the future. I'll put it clearly. Bathsheba is only playing with you. You are too poor for her, as I said. So give up wasting your time about a great match you will never make for a moderate and rightful match you may make tomorrow. Take up your carpet bag. Turn about, leave Weatherbury now, this night, and you shall take £50 with you. Fanny shall have 50, to enable her to prepare for the wedding, when you have told me where she is living, and she shall have 500 paid down on her wedding day. In making this statement, Boldwood's voice revealed only too clearly a consciousness of the weakness of his position, his aims, and his method. His manner had lapsed quite from that of the firm and dignified Boldwood of former times, and such a scheme as he had now engaged in he would have condemned as childishly imbecile only a few months ago. We discern a grand force in the lover which he lacks, whilst a free man, but there is a breadth of vision in the free man which in the lover we vainly seek. Where there is much bias there must be some narrowness, and love, though added emotion, is subtracted capacity. Boldwood exemplified this to an abnormal degree. He knew nothing of Fanny Robbins' circumstances or whereabouts. He knew nothing of Troy's possibilities, yet that was what he said. I like Fanny best, said Troy, and if, as you say, Miss Everton is out of my reach, why I have all to gain by accepting your money and marrying Fan. But she's only a servant. Never mind, do you agree to my arrangement? I do. Ah, said Boldwood, in a more elastic voice. Oh, Troy, if you like her best, why then did you step in here and injure my happiness? I love Fanny best now, said Troy. but Batch Miss Everton inflamed me and displaced Fanny for a time. It is over now. Why should it be over so soon? And why then did you come here again? There are weighty reasons. £50 at once, you said.
I did, said Boldwood, and here they are 50 sovereigns.
He handed Troy a small packet. You have everything ready, it seems, that you calculated on my accepting them, said the sergeant, taking the packet.
I thought you might accept them, said Boldwood.
You've only my word that the program shall be adhered to, whilst I at any rate have £50.
L had thought of that, and L have considered that, if I can't appeal to your honor, I can trust to your well, shrewdness we'll call it, not to lose £500 in prospect, and also make a bitter enemy of a man who is willing to be an extremely useful friend.
Stop, listen, said Troy in a whisper. A light pit-pat was audible upon the road just above them.
By George, 'tis she, he continued.
I must go on and meet her.
She who?
Bathsheba.
Bathsheba out alone at this time o' night, said Boldwood in amazement, and starting up.
Why must you meet her?
She was expecting me tonight, and I must now speak to her, and wish her goodbye according to your wish.
I don't see the necessity of speaking. It can do no harm, and she'll be wandering about looking for me if I don't.
You shall hear all I say to her.
It will help you in your lovemaking when I am gone.
Your tone is mocking.
Oh no.
And remember this, if she does not know what has become of me, she will think more about me than if I tell her flatly I have come to give her up.
Will you confine your words to that one point?
Shall I hear every word you say?
Every word.
Now sit still there, and hold my carpet back for me, and mark what you hear.
The light footstep came closer, halting occasionally, as if the walker listened for a sound.
Troy whistled a double note in a soft, fluty tone.
Come to that, is it?
Murmured Boldwood, uneasily.
You promised silence, said Troy.
I promise again.
Troy stepped forward.
Frank, dearest, is that you?
The tones were Bathsheba's.
Oh God, said Boldwood.
Yes, said Troy to her.
How late you are,
she continued, tenderly.
Did you come by the carrier?
I listened and heard his wheels entering the village, but it was some time ago, and I had almost given you up,
Frank.
I was sure to come, said Frank.
You knew I should, did you not?
Well, I thought you would, she said, playfully.
And, Frank, it is so lucky. There's not a soul in my house but me tonight.
I've packed them all off, so nobody on earth will know of your visit to your lady's bower.
Liddy wanted to go to her grandfather's, to tell him about her holiday, and I said she might stay with them till tomorrow when you'll be gone again.
Capital, said Troy.
But, dear me, one had better go back for my bag, because my slippers and brush and comb are in it.
You run home, whilst I fetch it, and I'll promise to be in your parlor in 10 minutes.
Yes.
She turned and tripped up the hill again. During the progress of this dialogue there was a nervous twitching of Boldwood's tightly closed lips, and his face became bathed in a clammy dew.
He now started forward towards Troy.
Troy turned to him, and took up the bag.
Shall I tell her I have come to give her up, and cannot marry her?
Said the soldier, mockingly.
No, no, wait a minute.
I want to say more to you, more to you, said Boldwood, in a hoarse whisper.
Now, said Troy, you see my dilemma. Perhaps I am a bad man, the victim of my impulses led away to do what I ought to leave undone.
I can't, however, marry them both.
And I have two reasons for choosing Fanny.
First, I like her best upon the whole, and second, you make it worth my while.
At the same instant Boldwood sprang upon him, and held him by the neck.
Troy felt Boldwood's grasp slowly tightening.
The move was absolutely unexpected.
A moment, he gasped.
You are injuring her you love.
Well, what do you mean? Said the farmer.
Give me breath, said Troy.
Boldwood loosened his hand, saying, by heaven, I've a mind to kill you.
and ruin her. Save her. Oh, how can she be saved now, unless I marry her? Boldwood groaned. He reluctantly released the soldier, and flung him back against the hedge. The devil, you torture me, said he. Troy rebounded like a ball, and was about to make Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.